Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. President-elect Joe Biden's nomination of U.S. Representative Deb Haaland for Secretary of the U.S. Department of the Interior is historic. If confirmed, she will be the first Native member of a president's cabinet. What does her nomination mean for Native Americans? And what do you hope she'll make top priority while in this position? We'll get perspectives from Native political watchers about this important moment in history. We'll do this right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The leader of Canada's largest Indigenous organization says the government must build back better for Indigenous people in the wake of the pandemic. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, Perry Bellegarde says Ottawa must invest in closing the gap for Indigenous people.
As he prepares to exit his leadership of the Assembly of First Nations, National Chief Perry Bellegarde recently spoke to the virtual General Assembly of the organization he's led for 6 years. He said there's a deep rift carved by decades and centuries of racism, discrimination, and indifference. And that gap has been amplified by the coronavirus pandemic, from the risk of infection to the stress of lockdown. Bellegarde said a lot has been done on testing, on treatment, resources, COVID-19 response, and personal protective equipment. But the work isn't finished.
When Canada starts rolling out a vaccine, we must ensure that First Nations people, regardless of where we live, that we're not left out again. And so now we must all join together to make sure that we're all protected. No one is safe until we're all safe.
Bellegarde said over the coming months he will continue to advocate for the needs of First Nations communities, for the help they will need to get through the health crisis. He said it's also an opportunity to build back better as the country rebuilds the economy. He said there can be no reconciliation without a big change to keep Indigenous people safe and guaranteed of a better future. The AFN wants the government in Ottawa to do more to deal with the disproportionate impact the pandemic is having on Indigenous communities. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The COVID relief and federal spending bill passed by Congress Monday included one of the nation's largest tribal water settlements in history. Aaron Bolton reports the settlement will provide the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes of Northwest Montana with nearly $2 billion for a local irrigation project.
The Montana Water Rights Protection Act passed on the coattails of the larger COVID relief and federal omnibus spending bill late Monday evening. The bill ratifies what's known as the CSKT Water Compact. During a virtual press conference Tuesday, CSKT Chairwoman Shelley Fiant told reporters the passage of the compact was decades in the making.
We chose the path of negotiation, and now we can avoid decades of acrimonious litigation on streams across much of Montana and protect many streams with sufficient amounts of water to ensure that fish can survive.
Under the compact, the tribes will relinquish thousands of water rights claims on and off the reservation in exchange for nearly $2 billion to revitalize the Flathead Irrigation Project and management of the National Bison Range. Fiant says the range will remain open to the public and will be professionally managed.
And who better to do it than the original inhabitants of the land who depended on the buffalo for centuries? That was our mainstay.
Reacquiring ownership of the National Bison Range has been a long-standing priority for the tribes and was rolled into the most recent version of federal legislation introduced by Republican Senator Steve Daines. His counterpart, Democratic Senator John Tester, first introduced a bill to ratify the compact in 2016, a year after Montana lawmakers approved the settlement. For National Native News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Pfizer's chief executive will join Navajo health officials and tribal leaders Thursday during a virtual town hall to discuss the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. The update comes as the Navajo Nation and tribes across the country have started vaccinations in their communities. The Navajo Nation received doses of the Pfizer vaccine last week. Among the first to get the shots were healthcare workers. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now. National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org. Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you from my homelands of Shirwiktui via Skype. Deb Holland from the Pueblos of Laguna and Jemez is set to make history again as the first Native American to hold a presidential cabinet position. She's currently a Democrat representing New Mexico in Congress. She already made headlines in 2018 as one of the first two Native women enrolled in a nation elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden nominated Holland to the Secretary of the U.S. Department of the Interior seat, a position that, among other things, oversees all Native American trust land, wildlife management, and things like oil and gas leases on federal land. Holland's nomination needs to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate, but the nomination itself is being celebrated across Native America. Here she is speaking after being introduced by Biden over the weekend.
I'm proud to stand here on the ancestral homelands of the Lenape Tribal Nation. The president-elect and vice-president-elect are committed to a diverse cabinet, and I'm honored and humbled to accept their nomination for Secretary of the Interior. Growing up in my mother's Pueblo household made me fierce. My life has not been easy. I struggled with homelessness. I relied on food stamps and raised my child as a single mom. These struggles give me perspectives, though, so that I can help people to succeed. My grandparents, who were taken away from their families as children and sent to boarding school in an effort to destroy their traditions and identities, maintained our culture. This moment is profound when we consider the fact that a former Secretary of the Interior once proclaimed his goal to, quote, civilize or exterminate us. I'm a living testament to the failure of that horrific ideology. I also stand on the shoulders of my ancestors and all the people who have sacrificed so that I can be here. My dad was a U.S. Marine, and no matter where we were stationed, he made sure we spent time outdoors. Time with my dad in the mountains or on the beach, and time with my grandparents in the cornfield at Laguna taught me to respect the earth and to value our resources. I carry those values with me everywhere. I'm a product of their resilience. As our country faces the impacts of climate change and environmental injustice, the Interior Department has a role to address these challenges. The president-elect's goals, driven by justice and empowering communities who have shouldered the burdens of environmental negligence. And we will ensure that the decisions at Interior will once again be driven by science. We know that climate change can only be solved with participation of every department and of every community, coming together in a common purpose. This country can and will tackle this challenge. The president-elect and vice-president-elect know that issues under Interior's jurisdiction aren't simply about conservation. They're woven in with justice, good jobs, and closing the racial wealth and health gaps. This historic moment will not go by without the acknowledgement of the many people who have believed in me over the years and had the confidence in me for this position. I'll be fierce for all of us, for our planet and all of our protected land, and I'm honored and ready to serve. Thank you again.
And what do you think about Holland's nomination? What do you think she can accomplish that other previous secretaries of the Interior couldn't? What needs to be at the top of her list if she is given the full road to lead in this position? All opinions are welcome. Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today, we're going to start off by welcoming in Dr. Aaron Payment. He is the chairperson of the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians and the first vice president of the National Congress of American Indians. And he is from the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians, where he joins us from today. Our pleasure to have him here. Chairperson Payment, welcome to another Native America Calling.
Honey, bonjour. It's exciting. Hearing her speak again is just, it makes you stop whatever you're doing and listen intently, because you can hear that there's a great fidelity in her voice to our ancestors. And so it's just so exciting to be at this moment.
And Chairperson Payment, hearing about this nomination, I know, was received by many people in the nation with celebration. And when we really start thinking of being in this position, the history of Native America with this specific department, what changes, or what are your thoughts just knowing that a Native person will be in this position?
Well, it's really exciting. In her acceptance speech for the nomination, she pinned it real clearly, and that is the different philosophy or ideology of such an important position. You know, we have lots of treaty and trust responsibility across the federal agencies, but principally, the Department of Interior has stood as the primary agency from the evolution from the Department of War to the Bureau of Indian Affairs and now the Department of Interior. And, you know, we're putting a lot on Deborah's shoulders, but she is fierce. She's a very strong Native woman, and she's going to be able to deliver. And so what I see is being on the precipice of systemic change to finally fully understand the treaty and trust responsibility. There's never been a voice like hers, and it's at the highest level. And so I'm just so excited about the opportunity. One other thing, and very particular thing, is the Secretary of Interior chairs the White House Council. The White House Council was created in the Obama administration to pull together all of the federal agencies to fully understand the treaty and trust responsibility, consultation, funding, and she will be the chair of that council. So then her role will transcend the Department of Interior to educate and build capacity among her peers, which will be the other cabinet members. And so that alone is going to make just such a phenomenal systemic change.
And just thinking of all the work ahead, what are some of the things you hope she makes a priority in this position?
So one of the areas that I know that she is going to make a priority, and I know this because of her role in Congress as the co-chair of the Native American Caucus, in legislation that she's already introduced, and if I had to pick two principal areas, the murdered and missing Indigenous women and Indigenous people is something she's very solidly committed to. And so we should see some great movement in that area, but also protecting our natural resources. You know, as an American Indian, we all know this. You know, we walk on our Mother Earth gently, and our waters are the lifeblood of our Mother Earth, and she carries that in her heart. And in her legislation that she's introduced as a congresswoman shows that. And so now that she will be charged with the responsibility of the federal government in communicating with tribes, our use of our land. The president's 30 by 30 initiative is being rolled out, and that's also to protect our natural resources. So I see her protecting our sacred sites, treaty rights, and our natural resources going forward. And that, I believe, that's going to be one of her legacies.
And Chairperson Payment, just thinking of this agency, and you know, you briefly touched on its history with our Native nations. Is there anything that you're thinking right now about just how important it is to maybe even rethink Native relationships with this position?
Absolutely. So the Department of Interior, depending on who's president, has had you know, it's ebbed and flowed in the respect for sovereignty in Indian country. But it has been a paternalistic relationship, make no mistake. Early on, we were encouraged by the federal government to refer to the Great White Father, and that paternalistic sort of approach deciding for us. But I believe that with a Native woman, it certainly isn't going to be paternal. I think that we're going to move in a new direction that is going to be respectful and to amplify the Native voice so that the relationship between the federal government and tribes is going to be more like, you know, the State Department and the relations with foreign countries. And I believe, and because I know in her heart, I've heard her speak about this, is that she's going to facilitate that different ideology about how we communicate. And the decisions should not be made for us. They should be made with us. And I believe strongly that that's we're going to see that in her administration.
All right. We are talking about the nomination of Deborah Holland to Secretary of the Department of the Interior. What are your thoughts? Join us now, 1-800-996-2848. And Dr. Payman, we have about a minute before break. Are there any words that are inspiring you about this moment?
So one of the things that I would just real quickly is Native women across the country, Shannon Hosley, Stockbridge Munsee, Melanie Benjamin, came up with the idea to create we call it a blue-brown wall, and we collaborated on it. And they are just so excited, our Native women across the country, because we broke that glass ceiling. And for the first Native person to be a Native woman to have broken that glass ceiling to reach that level is so inspiring, because it says to all Native women, our little Indian girls across the country, that they can achieve anything. Deborah Holland is fierce, and she wants us to be fierce. And it's so exciting when we think about our nieces and our relatives, that we can accomplish anything because of her example.
Yes, and it reminds me of that term that Cecilia Fire Thunder coined years ago, of cutting through that buckskin ceiling. Thanks for that, Dr. Payment. We'll continue our conversation here, but you are also welcome to join us as well. We want to know, you heard about the nomination. What's your reaction? What does it mean? What kind of priorities do you hope she's bringing to this position if she is put into this seat? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls. Tribal leadership, want to hear from you today, too. What are your thoughts? We'll hear from a tribal leader, too, coming up after the break. So stay tuned or dial in.
...2020 was the year to catch up on TV shows and movies, with the pandemic taking its toll. In our annual pop culture roundup, we'll hear about Native people that made it to the big and small screen as X-Men and other exciting characters. Join this discussion on the next Native America Calling.
Kuktash, Edan Sadik Chetash, Sapamam the Moimamchek of Pamira Hadwakik. Osmachit Kamumkidak, Tam Shodoy him Chigwamta of Amjidak, Mumkidak Apada. Aboy Haguga the Mamakai Mabumia, Kambaicha is my, or my Hachichiga, I'm healthcare dot gov, or my Haguga, I'm Homoko, Gigik Sikor Sikor, White Homoko, Gigik Kok, Hutas Homokchu, Edo Bamjit him Maxenards for Medicare to Medicaid Hachipka.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and today we're focusing on U.S. Representative Deb Holland. She's a member of Laguna Pueblo, and she also has roots in Jemez Pueblo. She's poised to be the first Native American Secretary of the U.S. Department of the U.S. of the Interior. And the nomination is being celebrated as a historical event by many in Native America, as well as other places. And what do you think about her nomination to this cabinet seat? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And right now, we're going to go to Etha T, Wyoming. On the line with us today is Chairman of the Northern Arapaho Tribe, Jordan Dresser. He is Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone. Our pleasure to have him here. And Chairman Dresser, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And Chairman Dresser, your reactions to this nomination?
I'm just really excited because for multiple reasons, but the biggest one is just the fact that we have somebody from our communities as Native people, as Indigenous people, we have somebody who knows our struggles and knows the things that we go through in a really key position. And I'm just excited for a lot of the things that she stands for, especially in terms of the environment. I think tribes really need to start turning to those different ways in order for us to thrive, not only economically, but also just to protect the earth. I mean, those are big things that we really need to address now. And I'm just excited that she's in there.
And understanding, you know, the different roles that our different nations play in, you know, leading our communities, and then you bring it all together, because a lot of times the conversations often drift towards what is going on with the Department of Interior, down to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and of course, land management and resources. Chairman Dresser, your tribe is in the oil industry. Her position is being touted as somebody who may be reversing some things. What are your thoughts about this, especially with the way your tribe depends on resource development? Any thoughts?
Well, the thing is that, like, oil and gas is not renewable, you know? And if we depend on that all the time, then we're just going to shoot ourselves in the foot. And we have to start exploring these different ways of getting energy, you know, and green energy is a big way to go. And I feel like it's a disservice to our people if we just get stuck in this way and thinking, okay, it's going to last forever, so therefore we're going to be stubborn. Like, no, we got to start being open to different things, because this world is changing. And we have to recognize that. And to me, if we're stuck in these old ways, we're not doing ourselves any favors. And we have to start thinking forward. And this is one of the ways we need to start thinking forward. And the time is now.
In thinking of forward and maybe even redesigning, adjusting, any thoughts on how things can be reshaped there at the Interior, or even specifically at the Bureau of Indian Affairs?
I think the thing with the Bureau of Indian Affairs is just that there's so many different levels you have to even get through to kind of have a conversation with different things. You know, I'm lucky enough where I get to have a lot of conversations with our local BIA about different things. But at the same time, it's just like sometimes I feel like the red tape of different things is what holds up a lot of different things. So I'm hoping that we could just kind of streamline things better and have better communication across the board, and just so that we could service our people better.
Well, I really appreciate you being here. And Chairman Dresser, anything you want to leave us with?
I'm just excited for this moment. I just feel like it's such a big thing. Like, there's such big changes coming, and I'm excited for what she'll bring to us. And I'm just excited that it's something that we've been waiting for a long time. And I feel like things are just going to work better for us to work with, you know, BIA, different things like that. I think things are just going to, like, I just see the silver lining, and I'm excited for what she's going to bring, and especially for the environment. I'm just really big on that. And I'm just excited and honored that we get to witness a big moment in time and that we all get to be a part of it. I'm just really honored, and I'm really excited for her.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Chairman of the Northern Arapaho Tribe, Jordan Dresser. Join us too. Again, tribal leaders, if you're out there, what are you thinking? 1-800-996-2848. Also, out of Little Canada, Minnesota, is another one of our guests. Chris Stainbrook is on the line, and he is the president of the Indian Land Tenure Foundation, and he is Lakota. Our pleasure to have him here as well. Chris, thank you for joining us. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Oh, thank you, Tara. Good to be on again.
And Chris, the golden question of the hour, what are your thoughts on this nomination?
I think it's very good. I think it's the right time and the right place. The last administration pretty much gutted the Department of Interior, and I think she's got the opportunity, as Chairman Dresser was saying, of looking forward and making things better. It's not enough to go back to where we were, but she has the opportunity really to move teams and move the whole department forward.
And when you say gutted it, what do you mean?
Well, there's unfulfilled seats available throughout the department that it got to the point where the budgets were all cut and positions were cut. There's a blank slate for her coming in and really redesigning how the department functions and looking forward and saying, okay, what are the efficiencies here that can be achieved? And I think that will serve Indian Country, but it'll also serve the rest of the country. When you look at the Department of Interior, it's extremely important throughout rural America. The Bureau of Land Management, the Bureau of Rec, you go down this list and you say, all right, you have something like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and of course, they were involved for years up at Salish Kootenai, and your news piece today was finally Salish Kootenai's taking over the bison refuge again. So it's all those pieces come to bear in Indian Country eventually.
And so seeing that your foundation works directly with land, in control of land and resources, what are some of the things in the past that have been obstacles in working with the department?
Oh.
And you know,
you're going to want me to go down a list, right? you know, a couple of the really big ones that we've been struggling with lately have been appraisals and valuation of lands, as well as the probate of trust estates. You know, we have probates going back that are still open for 30 or 40 years. We recently held a webinar on appraisals and heard from the new director at the Office of Valuation and Appraisal Services that the budgets had been cut severely and appraisals would be delayed considerably. And as you know, virtually every action on Indian land, on Indian trust land, requires an appraisal before it's taken. Those are a couple of the bigger pieces that have really come up lately.
And so how do you think having her in this position would affect any of this?
Going to have virtually an open slate simply because those offices are operating on bare bones. And I think she could take the opportunity to say, all right, how does this work more effectively? How do we get this done? It hasn't been done before very well, and that's what resulted early on in the Cabell case. And so can we now design a system that works better? And there are some pieces out there that we need to take advantage of. The land buyback program that came out of the Cabell settlement showed better ways to do titling of Indian lands, and we should take advantage of some of those efficiencies that were built into that.
And so do you have any concerns with her holding this position?
Oh, I don't say it's a concern, but it's kind of a little disheartening to lose that voice in Congress. And she was becoming quite a voice in Congress. This is the problem when we don't have any Indian people throughout the government, and you take one and move it to another position, which I think is a major step up, but we end up losing that voice in Congress too.
Yeah, that is a very important point. I'm glad you brought it up. And again, you can join us too, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and take a call. We have Eric on the line joining us today. Eric, thank you for joining us, and please feel free to further introduce yourself.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Next Baron Lion, a.k.a. Eric Holt of the Next First Tribe up here in North Central Idaho. I'd just like to say I was just, seeing all the negativity and things that have been going on with our government, and for Indigenous people, just to see the nominee of Deb Haaland And knowing that I seen her over in Standing Rock and stood by her, you know, I seen the passion and commitment and dedication and the willingness to give to her, you know, of herself to those in need. And that goes a long way. And I think the people see that through her and will have a voice, you know, with her and will stand by her. And I think it's important that we recognize that and look at it, you know, as something that, you know, the little girls can now look to somebody that is inspiring. And I think just across for Indigenous people, you know, we have something that we can look at and see and learn from as well. And she's willing to hear us. And I think that's important as we go forward.
All right, Eric, thank you for reaching out. And it's interesting you said that about young Native women, young girls who, and their effect on it. Because recently I was reading a post on Facebook from a young entrepreneur of Nejoni Soaps. And she had this long paragraph about what all this meant. And when her mom came into her room while she was in the middle of school to tell her, hey, guess what? And just her reaction, it was interesting to see that. And, you know, maybe we got some of those young people out there. You don't just have to be a young girl. Any thoughts about what this position means? Did you study? Did you write a book report or did you write a report about her? And now you're seeing another layer to her story. You want to join us? Call to 1-800-996-2848. Let's take another call on the line. We have Woody joining us out of Native America. Woody, thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air and go ahead. Introduce yourself.
My name is Woody Lee. I'm the executive director to Utah Tenembeke'ya, which is within the San Juan County, southern Utah. And we do, first of all, I'd like to say thank you to all the folks that have set aside some time, donating their time to encourage as many Natives that they can to put in the Native votes. And then at the same time, participating in the consensus count for this year, and which had brought over some of the red states into blue states. So I really, really appreciate and thank you to all those people that participated in that process. Within that, we are the grassroots, an organization that was built from a grassroots people within our within the Navajo Nation, knowing what is happening, witnessed by our elders and our grassroots people to in the Bears Ears area. And with that, a lot of concerns and everything that surrounds disturbing our past and our history and our ceremonies and our herbs and our food and our traditional hunting has been altered by people that do not have respect for Native. So from there, it had evolved into a proclamation that was signed by President Obama. The first time this type of a movement was done from a grassroots level all the way up to a national document. And then thereafter, you know what happened. It didn't take but a few days for this administration to trim that down to just only a small portion of that monument. And however, right now we have this particular, now we have an elections and now we have a new administration and the light of having it being reinstated and then to improbably enlarge that to the original proposal, which was a 9.9. Right now it's only just a few hundred thousand acres, and the what Obama passed was 1.35 million. So that is one of the prey campaigns that I guess all Native Nations need to join in and pursue that particular type of a healing place for all tribes and for all people to come in and be there.
And Woody, have you ever heard of Representative Holland ever say that she supported Bears Ears?
Yes, through the media and through a couple from some people that we know that knows her, that she supports Bears Ears and will be willing to support this particular movement at the beginning of the Biden's administration.
And Woody, finally, is there anything in thinking of what you and your organization have gone through to protect these different areas? You know that this kind of stuff happens across the nation with other tribal nations. Is there anything that you hope the department will pick up to safeguard more sacred places?
Due to knowing that not only that the Navajo people use this land. There are, within the Bears Ears Coalition, there are five tribes that this is somewhat of a crossroads and a healing place where they have ties to, and there's remnants of their rock art and of their dwellings and all of the some of the burials that are out there. So we would like to have this to where it's not only a temporary thing for the next another administration down the road that would change it. We'd like to have this thing a permanent land to where natives that would go to practice their ceremonies and prayers and offer for offerings of healing. Now, what I would like to extend to to my leader Deb Holland is that experience in living on the reservations, which is truly a federal land, but what they say is that for them to respect our sovereignty in a way to where right now, when we even to build a basic infrastructure, there is so many laws and policies and everything else that's wrapped around it to where it's almost impossible to provide basic infrastructure such as roads and water and electricity. And we do not even have a lot of people don't even have running water and electricity today, and which Utah Dynamica had offered over 1 million gallons of water and over 600 tanks, water tanks, to a lot of these folks, and anything that we can to provide food and cleaning supplies, sanitation supplies to a lot of the folks here on the Navajo Nation within San Juan.
There's definitely a lot to consider, and what do we got to go to break here? But I appreciate you calling in, giving us a quick view, and that's what we're asking for you to do. Give us a quick view of what this nomination means. 1-800-996-2848 is the number, and we want to hear your thoughts. Go ahead, dial now. We know you're ready, so pick up the phone.
If you're a Native American entrepreneur looking to expand or start up a business, you should know about the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program, a federal program encouraging private lenders to make the business loan you need. The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can support you. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are focusing on what Representative Deb Holland's nomination to be Secretary of the Interior means. And there is still time to join this conversation. What did you think of her nomination by President-elect Joe Biden? Call us now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And right now we're going to go to Washington, D.C. With us on the line is Diana Kanoyer. She is the Executive Director of the National Indian Education Association, and she is Oglala Sioux. Our pleasure to have her here. Diana, welcome. And something that people who are just learning about Native Nations, that this department has a really big role in education, including the Bureau of Indian Education. And so for you, Diana, what are you thinking about with this nomination? And of course, what is the work that still needs to be done?
Mm-hmm. Good morning and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with the panel and speak to the community. But I just want to echo what everyone has said. This is long overdue. This is a nomination that we've been waiting hundreds of years to actually see happen. So a lot of hope is, I think, floating around. And I just want to echo all of our tribal leaders that have said, we're really looking forward to, we are hoping that, we have plans too. So there is a feeling of progress and a feeling of moving forward. She has a lot of work on her plate. She has a lot of responsibility, and you're right. One of her pieces is unusually education. She has land, she has resources and water and a historical need to honor trust responsibility, but education is also gonna be a part of her responsibility. She spoke in her acceptance speech about her education, about her grandparents and her parents' education, how important education is, how education was used as a weapon. It was weaponized. It was used to annihilate culture, language, our thought and our philosophy. And it was under this system that she is now being a leader, has become a leader, that it was weaponized. So there is hope and just a feeling of empowerment. And we finally have a voice through her. And I don't want to speak for all of our bureau leadership and our students and our parents and community members, but as an NIA leader and member, someone who is also a fierce advocate, I stand with her, I stand behind her, and I support her work that she's going to do to support BIE. She comes from this background of bureau education, so she understands the systemic need for change. She understands the years and years and years of neglect. So this is not just make change at the systemic level, but now this is talking to people on the congressional side, the authorizers, where the money comes from. Stop asking our schools and our communities to offer not just academics, but the social, the emotional, the community, the health. You're asking us to do so much with so little. Deb's going to be this fierce advocate to tell Congress, you can't continue to ask our communities to do 100 things with pennies.
Wow, that is a powerful statement right there. And a lot of the source of why a lot of issues come up. And Diana, there has been a lot of critique of the Bureau of Indian Education in these past years, in the past, and maybe since it began. But currently, with some of the heat that it's gotten in the recent past, what are your thoughts? What needs to change? You know, is this something that you personally are going to call on Deb Haaland to look into, to change? Any thoughts?
Yes, I will hold her accountable, but I'll also hold her accountable to a degree of what she's able to change. I understand structurally, politically, and bureaucratically, change takes time. You're right. The Bureau has been dysfunctional for many, many, many years at the hands of many people. I think this current Bureau of Indian Education leadership has done the best they can within a structure that was not supportive of Native education issues, not supportive of meeting our unique cultural, but also academic, social, and emotional needs. So with her in the position of leader and decision maker, allow the BIE leadership to do their job. I'm constantly arguing and advocating. It's an education system, but you have business people, you have politicians and bureaucrats making decisions for education. They don't know education. They have a degree. They are educated, but they don't know the systems at the local level. The people that are in those positions right now, the director, his chief of staff, his policy people, his staff, they have degrees in education. Most of them were in our community teaching or in leadership positions. It's going to require systemic change over a period of years to invest in making the change that we need. But you've got to trust the people that are in those positions. Go ahead.
Thank you for that. I got a caller on the line. We're going to say hi to Frank in Dillingham, Alaska, tuned in on KDLG. Frank, thanks for reaching out. You're on air.
Yeah, good morning. I'd like to bring forward, I'm really excited that we have First Nations people in the White House now, that Alaska is unique in a sense that we settled on the Alaska Name Claim Settlement Act, and subsistence rights were and are being diminished, you know, with every regulation change. And like the lady before me said, there's not enough people in our First Nations people that are involved that can do everything that is being asked of us. And subsistence rights at the federal level, at the Federal Subsistence Board and the McDowell decision in the state of Alaska, diminished Aboriginal and subsistence rights in both state and federal lands. I'd like to start a conversation that would put that right back into, you know, we live in America where if the laws ain't working, we are shut down in just about every area here in 17A with moose and caribou now, and we have a hard time feeding our families. That these laws were meant for us to sustain ourselves. And I'm really excited that at least we have a voice. And the second thing is, you know, I just seen that NOAA took over some of the fishing rights outside of Cook Inlet, that these communities that we live in, rural Alaska, are really starving, not only just starving, but they're hurting to the point where I don't, you know, we have no voice anymore, but now we do. I'd like to start a conversation where true subsistence on lands are going to be. I'm really excited for this whole process, and thank you for letting me share.
All right, Frank, thanks for reaching out, and we're going to continue to reach out to another voice. We're going to go to Lenape Territory, New York City. On the line with us today is Judith LeBlanc. She is a director of the Native Organizers Alliance, and she's a member of the Caddo Nation of Oklahoma. Our pleasure to have her here. Judith, welcome. And again, there you go. What's your thoughts on this nomination?
Well, I just agree with all that have spoken before me. I cried my head off on the day of the nomination, and it was tears of joy, but quickly I moved to what is our role? How do we in our communities make systemic change possible? Deb can't make the changes we need alone. The only way changes can be done under her leadership is if we, traditional leaders, tribal leaders, grassroots community organizers, play our roles. Deb said at the Democratic Party convention that voting is sacred. And on Twitter, there was a lot of debate about that. But what she was saying and what she brings to the Secretaries of the Interior position is that she is well aware and she is guided by her ancestral responsibility to resume the moral, inherent, and legal rights that we have as Native peoples to be caretakers of the earth. She will be guided by that. And the truth is that the fossil fuel industries have often thought that this was their seat. They had an open door to do whatever they wanted to our sacred sites, to our land, our water, to public lands. And so one of the things that I think earlier was said, Chairman Dresser, that we have to think and look at the horizon. We have to think about the future. And that's what we're going to have with Deb, someone who has an indigenous framework of looking towards the future and thinking about how best to create conditions for regenerative economic development, not economic development at the great cost to our sacred sites, to our lands, and our water.
And Judith, what is the buzz around grassroots organizations on this? We've heard from tribal leaders, and, you know, we continue to hear more from different parts. But when it comes to grassroots efforts, sometimes when it comes to discussions about land management, the things that fall under the Department of the Interior, sometimes grassroots aren't heard. What do you think about this person and what it may mean for those voices to be heard now?
Well, the powerful thing about Deb is that she's from the grassroots, and so she hears us. We, Native Organizers Alliance, collected nearly 19,000 signatures of people all across Indian country and allies who supported her nomination. And at this moment in history, given all the problems that the previous speakers have lifted up, the one thing that from the grassroots level, people want and they know what the impact will be if it is achieved. And that is if she can move the system to utilize prior informed consent as the way land and resources are managed. Prior informed consent. The Department of the Interior, the Bureau of Land Management, they're in the practices of sending a few emails to a tribal leader and then calling the case closed, or having hearings, people testifying, and then decisions already really have been made in collusion with fossil fuel industries, whether it be the public auctions now underway in Chaco Canyon lands, or Dakota Access Pipeline, or the Keystone XL Pipeline. And so prior informed consent, people understand that at the grassroots, and that's what people want. Our tribes must be a part of the equation in making decisions on infrastructure, because not only is it a moral and inherent right, but there's a legal right. There's a legal right that has not been exercised and utilized, and therefore, I think she'll be able to thread that needle.
All right. Thank you for that. Judith LeBlanc with us today. And also here, too, is Dr. Aaron Payment. He is the chairperson of the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians, also the first vice president of the National Congress of American Indians. And Chairperson Payment, just after hearing all of this and just thinking, you know, of the work to be done, also wanted to get your thoughts, because this is the Department of the Interior. Bureaucracy exists. There's a lot of hopes. There's a lot of things she wants to bring to this office. But the bureaucracy and getting things done still exists. And I just want to get your comments on that, because anybody who's worked with the department on any level, you understand there is a lot of layers of bureaucracy, even when you're trying to do good work that sometimes is interpreted as something else. Your comments on any of that?
Yeah. So first, if I could just echo a sentiment. You just heard there were 19,000 signatures. There were over 200 tribes in a petition drive, and the National Congress of American Indians passed a resolution supporting a Native person to be the nominee, and the Midwest Alliance of Sovereign Tribes also passed a resolution specifically nominating her. And so more than just a nomination, this was a movement. I think that we've put our eggs in the right basket, because she is a zenith. She's a powerhouse, and her experience as a legislator and somebody who's been able to reach across the aisle. I know, you know, you read a lot of things, and they were saying that she wasn't qualified, but, she had 2 years as a legislator and as a community organizer, as an attorney. And who else do we know had those same qualifications? Barack Obama. And I think that she's going to be able to communicate across the aisle. She works very well with Congressman Tom Cole and Mark Wayne Mullins. They serve as co-chairs. Tom Cole and she serve as co-chairs on the Native Congressional Caucus. And, you know, we have a lot of expectations, but we're realistic, too. We know that change isn't going to happen overnight. But from what I'm hearing from the transition team, and I've been called on at least 7 or 8 times to consult on different policy items. I really think full funding is on the horizon. I think mandatory funding and advanced appropriations for IHS, BIE, BIA are on the horizon. And so I think that she's got a lot of power behind her with Indian country supporting her. And the time is going to come when she's going to have to say, we can't do that right now. And so I'm hoping that tribal communities will recognize that we're in this for the long haul and for the systemic change. But I do think she is going to find, like water that finds its way through different cracks and crevices, she has shown me that she's got those skills, and she's going to be phenomenal at it.
All right. And that's going to wrap it up for our conversation today. Thank you to Chairperson Aaron Payment, also Judith LeBlanc, Christine Brooke, and Diana Knoyer, as well as Chairman Jordan Dresser. That's going to do it for us today. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow as we take a look at 2020, a year in Native pop culture. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thanks for tuning in. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
If you're hurting in your relationship and want to talk, Strongheart's Native Helpline is a confidential and anonymous domestic violence helpline for Native Americans available at 1-844-762-8483 or connect with a live advocate by using the Chat Now button at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer support and referrals for resources daily, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time. This program supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.